Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With us today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
Good. Did you stay up real late? Watch breathlessly who was going to become our next president?
Yeah, I was excited.
You know, I think if you were worried about it, the evidence with looking at that group that has that primary now doesn't look like they're much of a threat to Trump.
No, it doesn't.
Even when they should be, on occasions that they should be, like on foreign policy, we don't hear it. Unfortunately, only Tulsi would talk about our foreign policy, type of foreign policy.
And even Bernie, who's marginally better, he had a huge lead, and then all of a sudden, here comes Buttigieg, the CIA choice.
That thought just crossed my mind because I heard the rumor, and I went, there's a lot of stuff on the internet. So if anybody wonders about that, because we'll probably mention it on occasion that Buttigieg is close to the CIA in the military and all that, and he looks like he's well trained.
Yeah.
To be one.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say even if he doesn't make it this time, he'll get in office just like Pompeo. You know, he worked up the ranks, but boy, he moved rapidly.
Fast.
You know, just a few years ago when I was finishing up in Congress, he and I were in Congress together. Then here he is. He runs the world.
So, I was just going to mention when it comes to Buttigieg that the Gray Zone Project and Max Blumenthal have done some really good work. So if our viewers want to...
Well, I'm sure we'll do some
But we have Amy Klobuchar, right? So she's a great moderate progressive voice.
Oh, yeah.
Look at her foreign policy.
Well, I was a little concerned and thought she'd go, okay, because she was on Joint Economic Committee. And I got to know her a little bit. She was really, if we didn't talk politics, a very nice person to talk to. And she made more sense. So she wasn't quite the Elizabeth Warren type of person that just was giddy and all over the place.
But when you scratch the surface, she called Maduro a tyrant. She's all for the overthrow of Maduro. She's terrible in the Middle East. Anyway.
Daniel, that wasn't our subject for today, but it's on our minds, which means it might be on the minds of some of our viewers today and what's happening. We tried to help Tulsi, and she did get, I don't think she was wiped out considering she has a message, and she's sticking to the message. So we'll keep our fingers crossed, and she plans to continue getting that message. I would just hope that she can make it more popular and popularize it. So.
Well, I think like yours, she's running a pretty lean campaign, and you were able to hold off for a while because you were lean and mean, too, and you actually had more opportunities later on.
See, if you think in terms of getting a message out, you think totally differently than you're looking for your future. What do I do for my future career as a politician?
Yeah.
Oh, this is the appropriate time to drop out,
that
sort of thing.
Interesting.
Rather disgusting. So we'll see what happens there. But I want to talk today about security to the Palestinians. And, of course, Trump had this recent peace treaty that he proposed. It hasn't been well received by the Palestinians, sure, nor very many Arab Muslim nations. But they're still pressuring both Israel and the United States is pressuring the Palestinians. So the first thing we did was, we send them money. But it's just because of our charitable nature.
Yeah.
All foreign aid is quid pro quo. It's sent there, you do this and you do this. And every once in a while it gets totally politicized. And that is what has happened. But I think just recently Trump said we'll discontinue this aid. And this program's been going on since 1993, so it's in place a long time. But, of course, the correct position for all this on sorting out the crisis in the Middle East is nobody gets special treatment. Nobody gets money. You can be as friendly as you can and trade as much as possible, do whatever we can to get along with everybody. But in this case, we're running this balance that compared to what Israel gets, the Palestinians weren't getting a heck of a lot.
Yeah,
but this was punishment. This is pressure. And it was put there to say that you have to join it and you need us and you won't get the information from us and you won't get us these millions of dollars that we send. And quite frankly, I don't think it's going to work.
Yeah, and it's not just the Arab nations that were against Trump's deal of the century. It was actually Kushner's deal of the century. The Europeans, virtually the entire world, recognize it as an insane proposal. But what we're talking about here is the State Department. They drafted their budget request for the next year, and they canceled the funding for the Palestinian security services. Now, Trump already canceled humanitarian funding and aid to the Palestinians back in 17. But this, for the first time, as you point out, since 93, since Clinton rolled into office convinced that he was going to solve the Palestine-Israel crisis, that the U.S. has canceled this. What the money does is it funds the Palestinian security services that cooperate with their Israeli counterparts, and they do their best to keep the peace in the West Bank. Now, of course, we are not arguing for the continuance of this money, but what we're noticing is that this is punishment for the Palestinians' wholesale rejection of the deal of the century, that we're talking about $35 million. And we saw a good piece in the Middle East Eye that was linked on antiwar.com, so give credit there and a hat tip there. But the irony pointed out in the Middle East Eye article was just last year in the budget, it said, quote, justifying the funding for this military, this security aid for Palestine, quote, a stable West Bank is key to the national security of the United States. And yeah. All of a sudden, the next year, it's like Orwell. It's like an unstable West Bank is now key to our security.
Yeah, it was going to help us, our security, and our allies in the region, this sort of thing. Yeah, that is the hypocrisy. And the whole, of course, the big hypocrisy is the emphasis on quid pro quo, as if, because everything is quid pro quo. Matter of fact, even the daily, I keep thinking about this, even the daily activities in Congress, when somebody wants wants to get something for his district, he gives up his beliefs and gives them vote, it does that quid pro quo. There's always the wheeling and dealing. But there was a little bit of pressure and dealing with Israel, because Israel controls the water to the Palestinians.
Yeah.
The Palestinians struggle, and they have their problems, but they have to have more pressure. And the pressure that Israel put on the Nile is, in spite of those conditions, one thing that they've been successful is in agricultural products and olive oil and dates and things of this sort. So on Sunday, I think it was announced, no more. You have this ability to export this through Jordan. We're not going to let you do that anymore. So they have the weapon of the water, which has been used against the Palestinians. Now it's the weapon of food and their livelihood. And, of course, the pretense that they're helping the Palestinians with this treaty is they're going to spread them out in the midst of the rest of Israel, but they would be isolated. And obviously, from their point of view, it's of no benefit to them, and it's going in the wrong direction, which is rather sad. It's a long way from what we would advise if they accidentally ask us our opinion, and that is just stay out of it. Let them work it out, and things would be a lot better than us picking one side or the other, or picking both sides and then pretending, and then always wheeling and dealing and telling people what you must do in order to continue to get our money.
Our money, our money, literally. But this, the Sunday thing was pretty bad, because it forbids the Palestinians from exporting agricultural goods through Jordan. And they estimate that will cost about 30% of losses this winter. And if they continue, it'll be up to 50 to 60% of revenue losses for Palestine. And we're not talking about agribusiness. These are small farmers. Yeah. These are guys that put some stuff in the back of a pickup truck and make a few bucks. I mean, the cynical among us could almost argue that by introducing a deal of the century that everyone with half a brain knew would be rejected, they're almost green-lighting this kind of almost genocidal behavior. You can't sell anything. You can't have any water. You can't do anything. It's almost a green light for this,
Yeah. And this is something, of course, that has gone on for a long time, on how they control and intimidate, and they perpetuate the hostilities in the region. But there's human suffering from this. But there's something that symbolically always bothered me, along with the human suffering.
Yeah.
And that was when they took these trees, these olive trees, hundreds of years old, and just on purpose just destroyed them because it was part of the livelihood. That's not how to get along with your neighbors, I don't think. And that, unfortunately, has happened. And there's so much emotions in this, you know, these people in this country that, you know, supports anything against the Palestinians.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get an objective issue there. That's why I don't think you can. I think that's why you have to back off a little bit. And one thing that is very risky to say, because it sort of suggests, oh, you don't sound like you're an American, and that is when you pick up the three reasons why 9/11 occurred. One of the major reasons was the way we, United States, treat the Palestinians.
Yeah.
You know, but that's un-American, so to speak, to mention that. But if it's true, I think it should be considered, and maybe encourage people to think of a different foreign policy. It's not like if they move in our direction that we're going to be less safe, we're going to be more safe. So this foreign policy is dragging us down, and that's what I've been, you know, talking about for so long, because our civil liberties are attacked, our financial institutions are attacked, and we have more enemies, and the foreign policy failures, we talk about that almost daily, about we did this, and the quid pro quo didn't quite work, and then it gets entered into our domestic politics constantly, and this whole Russiagate, I mean, that is just was so out of control.
Yeah.
But that's the kind of thing that is a consequence of all this mischief we're in, rather than concentrating on how do you have a country where the goal is to preserve the liberty of the individuals and let people take care of themselves.
Yeah. And you talk about us being more safe. That's true. But also the Israelis would be more safe, too.
Yeah, right.
You know, the Palestinians stirred up. They've had everything, as our friend Gerald Celente says. And you've got nothing left, you've got nothing left to lose, you know, and that'll be the case, so they'd be more safe. But the reason we wanted to focus, partly one of the reasons we wanted to focus on the term quid pro quo, and I'm sure it was obvious to our viewers when they saw the title, is this is the justification for the impeachment of the president. He withheld aid to Ukraine because he thought it would benefit him politically. It was a quid pro quo. Well, how is this any different? He's withholding aid to the Palestinians. Obviously, there's no question that among a big sector of his electorate, this will benefit him because, as you point out, they support anything against the Palestinians. How was this not a quid pro quo for Trump voters? All right, hitting those Palestinians again, doing Israel's bidding. You know, how is it not the case? I haven't heard any Democrats upset about it.
I was just going to mention, that's the thought that came to my mind. In this case, it's bipartisan. You know, the Democrats aren't going to complain about this. This is good, quid pro quo.
Yeah.
We agree with this. Don't do it. And, of course, we talked about the other day about the wars that are started. You know, it's always, do they care about the Constitution and quid pro quo when we allow presidents to go to war? That's incidental. But, no, we have the Speaker of the House bragging about her Christian duty to bring about peace and follow the Constitution. Well, that's pretty bad. But this is you know, not a good sign of what's going on here. And I think that it's going to get much worse before it gets better. But I don't know how Trump's going to get out of this mess without more violence over there. And it's not going to be very, very easy to do.
Well, there's a real danger because, you know, again, not that we support the aid, you know, in a pure sense. But the danger is, I think, what the intent of this withholding this money is, destroying the cooperation between the Palestinian and Israeli security services. We know that Israel is just chomping at the Israeli authorities, the Netanyahu government, I should say, not Israel, because the people aren't the government. But the Israeli government is chomping at the bit to annex the West Bank. They're looking for a pretext. If you destroy the cooperation that keeps a relative level of peace, and then you know, keep the people from exporting in this, and then violence breaks out, that provides the Israeli authorities the perfect pretext to come in and say, okay, that's it, we got to annex it. It's all,
you know, over. And the other place where I think there's a lot of hypocrisy is our preaching the gospel about human rights.
Yeah.
And I have most of the time become annoyed with this principle of human rights. I always think of individual rights, and you really don't have human rights. What is it competing with? But anyway, the term is understood that that's a requirement that people treat the minorities, everybody, fairly, and you don't punish people unfairly. But it's amazing how we watch that some countries that get on the human rights watch, you know, they can be pretty vicious with their people. And like, frequently it would come up, and maybe still comes up with China, well, they don't follow human rights and they don't do this, so we shouldn't deal with these kind of people. But the whole thing is that one time this came up in the committee, and they were talking about we shouldn't do such and such because China wasn't protecting the human rights of a few individuals. So I, you know, calmly but directly pointed out about what about us protecting the human rights and the individual liberties of our own citizen. And, you know, they really didn't have an answer to that. They said, well, you got a point there. And yet this is a reason they use to pick sides, and yet that is just, you know, a pretense. I mean, they if they cared, I was looking up the list of the people who violate civil liberties and don't protect human rights, and some of it's, you know, makes sense,
yeah.
Even though it's not, shouldn't be a group of people that you direct all your attention to. But you'd be amazed, abuse of the Palestinians as a violation of human rights, I couldn't find it on any list.
Yeah.
And just think of Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
They get appointed to head up the committee in the United Nations,
yeah,
to protect against abuse of human rights.
Yeah.
What a joke.
Well, you mentioned before the program that you were watching Senator Lankford from Oklahoma justifying the withholding of this aid because of their bad human rights record.
Right.
You know, we put up a piece on the Ron Paul Institute website this morning pointing out that the latest report from the Afghanistan Reconstruction Inspector General found that thousands of Afghan civilians have been killed in the reconstruction effort. Not in the war, just in the effort to reconstruct, thousands have been killed. That doesn't say very much for our human rights record if we kill thousands reconstructing the country we blew up in the first place.
See, they have a completely different definition of war. You don't declare war now. You just go and do what you have to do. And the war itself and the committing of coups and taking over governments and putting our CIA agents around the world, that's all one thing. So it's a blending in. So I made a comment one time a long time ago that we were doing something in the Middle East and we were helping to bomb something. I said, you know what? What's going to happen is it's not going to solve the problem, and before you know it, we'll be spending money to rebuild it. But that's ongoing. This is what they justify a lot of that money to Afghanistan. We're rebuilding Afghanistan.
Yeah, okay.
So I guess if you bomb it and tear it up, it's sort of instead of what? You know, I think it was Paul Krugman one time said it would be worthwhile to keep jobs going if you had paid people to dig a hole and then paid people to close it up again, because they would make earn money. It's just crazy stuff.
It is. It is crazy. And I guess we're winding down here.
Sure.
So I would just close by reminding our viewers that we are having a conference on May 23rd. We just actually signed the contract, Dr. Paul. I hope you're okay with that. In Houston, it'll be at the Hilton at the Galleria. It's a really nice hotel. I'll have more details. I'm going to put together our ticket page today. I hope I get it finished. But mark the date, May 23rd in Houston. Dr. Paul will be there giving a speech. We've got some other great speakers. We'll have a nice time. So mark that in your calendars. Look forward to seeing all of you.
Okay, and I want to finish up, you know, with mentioning that our government wants to be cautious about, you know, fighting terrorism. So they have a list of people to put on, you know, like ISIS and Al-Qaeda and all. But right now what they're doing is they're talking about putting people who give out information. Institutions like WikiLeaks will be put into the same category. But we've heard this already. You know, the people, just think of how we've treated, Edward Snowden and individuals who tell us the truth. They end up being put in jail. Now they want to take an organization and make it equivalent to the Al-Qaeda itself, the thing that we're supposed to be fighting. That is such hypocrisy. And yet, truth is the enemy of the people who want to run the empire. And that's what they can't stand. And this is the reason why, to stay in the system and be a player, you have to end up playing these games of quid pro quo. Quid pro quo is the name of the game. The first time I ever went to Washington, I was very interested in monetary policy, and I was totally uninformed about what it was like. So I went to the chairman of the committee at the time, and this was like the first or second day, and he was a Democrat. And I said, I'm very interested in getting a discussion on such and such. And the reaction was, what are you going to give me? That was it. All I wanted was a little discussion on monetary policy. So then everything is a trade-off. And so the quid pro quo is a serious problem. But I tell you what, the quid pro quo argument about what went on in this impeachment process, that is just a distraction. It has nothing to do with what quid pro quo is really all about. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.